The Nine Years Podcast is brought to you in association with Season Master and the Window Workshop. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 328 of the 9 Years Podcast. Thank you very much for downloading the show this week. I am Luke Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. We have a lot to cram in this week. We will be looking back to the defeat to Stockport. We'll be looking ahead to the visit of Crewe Alexandra on Saturday. And we'll have a look around League Two as well. Aaron Sasuke match game returns, of course. But Stu, the big news, as we record this on Wednesday evening, club statement came out earlier today. Timely. We were expecting this a long time ago. But anyway, it came out and just said that clearly following the departure of Danny Macklin from his role as COO, Chief Operating Officer, wasn't he? That was the official title for him. He said it was quite a coup to get him. He's obviously departed. Chris Stewart is going to take over that role. That has not been said in this statement that was released today. We are recording this, as I say, on Wednesday evening. But he is going to step in to help oversee stadium business and operations whilst we search for a new... Oh, do you know what, Stu? This will teach me to pay attention. I was explaining to you afterwards, I've been out all day with Year 11 up into King's Cross doing a geography field trip. I'm absolutely shattered and I haven't had a chance really to go through this with a fine tooth comb. The recruitment process for AFC Wimbledon's next managing director is underway. That's what the statement says. I'm so confused. Yeah. Who's managing director? Who's COO? And what is Chris Stewart?
See, I thought Danny Macklin's title was managing director, or is that just what we? I don't know. But I think you're right, wasn't it? It was head of football operations, which Craig Coatfield. I don't know.
I thought Mick Buckley. What's Mick Buckley's title? What's he?
I thought he was the chief executive still. Or was he the chief? I don't know. Answers on a postcard. Normally we've got the information at hand, but I think, do you know what? I think it just proves, since obviously last Monday when it was announced that Danny Macklin was leaving, it feels like it's just been draining. It's like going on and on and on. And you sort of like got the statement now, you're going, good, done, let's move on. When actually really you should be looking at a statement because Danny Macklin's role was really important and Chris Stewart's covering of it is really important, and we need to make sure that we've got it right because it's a very important role.
Mick Buckley is AFC Wimbledon chair. He was given the role for a period of 1 year on the 23rd of August 2022. So that's actually his year's gone. So who knows? He's probably the next one to step down. Don't know. I've just thrown that out there. Don't start telling me that 9 Years Podcast announced that Mick Buckley's stepping down. We don't know. I'm just speculating on the timelines that I'm reading on this statement. Danny Macklin was indeed managing director. Chief Operating Officer? Who knows? Maybe that's a wrestling term. Maybe that's Triple H's role in WWE. I don't know. I get confused. The point of this, Stu, what I'm trying to get across is, it is all very confusing, as you have said. It does start to suck the life out of you. And it does make you start to just not care because it's just, we've got no control over it. It's all very confusing. As I've said many times in this podcast, you've got the Doms Trust, you've got the PLC, and you've got the this percentage of voting rights and that percentage of voting rights. Oh, who cares? Like, literally, who cares? I'm past caring. I don't care. Just let me watch some football, please. And as long as we're not going bust, then it's fine.
No, you're right. But it's dangerous if you get an attitude, because actually, I feel the club and the Don Trust members give it a very sort of like solid base of not overseeing, but making sure we ratify decisions, making sure we challenge the Don Trust and all those things. And I feel that's got weaker and weaker as the years have gone by. And Don Trust membership is due up again, and I'm sitting here going, I don't really know if I want to renew it. Like, I know what I get. I get a share. I get to be an owner. But I sit and it's just draining the life out of me. You're right. We had the Meet the Don's Trust Board with Chris Phillips. He'd done a really good stuff on diversity and inclusion. I quite like that. And Michelle done an update on the finance. But I'll be honest with you, I'm just bored. Not it's not even bored. I'm just it's draining. On top of the football from last season, it was draining. I just want to watch some football, enjoy some wins, but equally, we as a fan base, as Don's Trust, shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we need to keep these people that are looking after the club on our toes. And it's a very difficult opportunity. It's a very difficult time. And with Chris Stewart, we know he's done the job back for AFC Wimbledon, but AFC Wimbledon looked a very different place back then to what it is now.
Is this all because we're just far too close to it? I'm just thinking of what's the attendance on Saturday? 7,000 odd. So it's about just under 7,000 home fans, maybe. How many if you ask these people would be able to answer these questions? Who's this person? Who's that person? Do they? A lot. I don't know how many people would actually be able to tell you. But more importantly to that, those that couldn't tell you, should they know? Why should they care? And honestly, no other football club, and I promise you, no other football club in the country has fans having these sorts of conversations where we're actually, as a podcast, as a fan-run podcast, and you look at various guest books and social media and stuff like that, where people are having conversations about, well, which member of staff at the club is looking after this element, who's looking after match day operations, who's looking after media operations, who do nobody's asking these questions. And yet somehow, because the way our model is, it and how close we perhaps are to it, we start to care about these things, which really. Bottom line is
No,
nobody, literally nobody cares.
that's what I'm saying. It drains you, doesn't it? And you get moments, and then you get moments like this where, just to be fair, the news of Chris Stewart coming into the role hasn't gone down well. And I think that's probably for many reasons.
Can I make a point like on that one? Yes, that the appointment of Chris Stewart as the sort of unnamed role within the football club has gone down like a lead balloon. But I keep making this point, lead balloons go down very well if you think about this logically. So we need to
That's
think of a
great.
new metaphor for this. Maybe it's gone over like a fart in church, or it's gone over like a Jinder Mahal world title win. Chucking out for the
I
rest of
stick
that as
to. I
well.
think we stick to lead balloon, but of course it's going to go down quickly because lead's quite heavy, of course,
Yes,
isn't
therefore
it?
it'll go down very well.
Yeah. Hey, look. Do you know what? And I think what I'm saying at the moment is not anything. To me, it's just the role. It's not the person who's doing it. Chris Stewart. I've got a lot of time for him and respect for him for all the stuff he's done. This isn't a dig at Chris Stewart. This is going. Have we got the right person? How is it ratified? Was there any other candidates? Because this role was, Danny Macklin was putting in a lot of hours to do this role with a lot of ideas, and he's gone. It's a massive hole in a really important role. And yes, you're right in saying that,
You're a poet and you don't know
you're right to say that, do the fans know who this, but should we know about it? But those that don't care on a Saturday, what happens now will impact us further down the line if we don't get it right. We've seen this before. When we say we've got enough budget, it's not all of a sudden we just dream up and go, what budget can we get? We've been working on that for the plan for the last two or three seasons. And it's equally when information, you get some fans that don't want to be involved in it. And at the moment, there's a lot of people going, well, why are we not doing this? Why are we not doing that? But have they got the stomach for the fight? Have they got the stomach to keep doing this? Because they will drip in and drip out. And that's probably where I am now. I'm really tired of it. I just want to go to Plough Lane. I want to watch some football, but equally, I want to be confident that the money I'm putting into the club is being spent wisely, and we have a plan. And I'm worried, and it's a shame because Danny Macklin was giving me a lot of confidence, and he's gone now. And we need to recruit properly, and we've got a period of time now where, let's be fair, this role might not be recruited for a good 4 6 months.
It's going to
That's
be
a
a
long
long
time.
time. It's going to be a long time. I mean, with apologies for this podcast, it's going to be a little bit stream of consciousness-esque as we touch on various different points. Point you must not forget here is, as Stu, you point out there, is that yes, as much as this winds you down and stuff like that, the bottom line is we want to be a fans-owned club, then we are the ones that have to finance it. The problem is that when it comes down to us financing it, it's similar to being a taxpayer, essentially. And you want to make sure that your money is being spent in the best way possible. And if it's not being spent in the best way possible, what sort of recourse do you have to that? You can vote out your Don's Trust board members, but at the end of the day, they're not the ones dealing with the day-to-day issues. And as long as you don't say something horrendous, like maybe Luton Town did 20 or 25 years ago, and owner comes in and messes everything up financially, da, 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 da. Unless they're making huge errors, catastrophic mistakes, you're always going to have an element of subjectivity about is your money being spent in the best way, is it not? Da, 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 da. It becomes very difficult. As you say, people do start to lose the interest in the process because it's quite long-winded and da, 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 da. And then people start dropping out and people don't start joining the Dons Trust and people don't start voting and you get yourselves into all sorts of problems with that. We're in a little bit of a pickle now as it is because Chris has obviously had to step down from his role as the Dons Trust board chair, which means the Dons Trust board is currently, according to the website, only got 7 members. And according to the constitution, it must have a minimum of 8. Now, clearly, I think they've already said they're going to co-opt people onto that. But how much of a grace period do you have that? Can you can't actually do anything in the meantime until someone's appointed, surely. So there's all sorts of ramifications and knock-on effects, which all really links back to the fact that it's also very complicated and complex for basically the average match going fan to actually give a shit.
Yeah, and do you know what Michelle Little is? I've got a lot of time for Michelle, got a lot of confidence in her ability on the finances side, but does she need the Don's Trust chair on top of that? Does she need that additional side of it? And then your co-chair is Graham Price, who again, good financially and stuff like that. I think the thing is we've got functional people doing the roles. Chris Stewart did a lot as chair. I think he took a lot of responsibility on, led the direction of it all. It just, you're right. You've got the Don, you've got the elections coming up, which will be fun. I don't know if you really need them at this time. But the fact is that the Don's Trust Board is an oversight. That's what they are now. They're an oversight of it. And the PLC realistically not can do what they want to do, but we don't know what they're doing because we're still waiting for, what is it, June and July's PLC meeting minutes. So, they're the people that we want the Don's Trust board to be accountable for. At the moment, we're a little lean in those areas, as well as, let's not underestimate this. Danny Macklin worked a lot of hours because there was a lot to do. We have a very lean workforce underneath Danny. Not many middle managers, stuff like that. They need direction as well. And we're lean on that. We are lean across the board now, and I'm just hoping we don't start to see any cracks because it's very difficult for the people working for the club to work how they are, and now they've lost a leader as such in a very quick timeline.
Yeah, don't forget, Stu, it wasn't so long ago where we were pointing out the fact that in a very short space of time, we lost a Don's Trust board chairman, we lost a AFC CEO. I suppose it was Joe Palmer that was probably CEO or COO or whatever. That's probably what I was thinking at the start of the podcast. We lost the manager as well in a short time frame. And again, we've now got another situation where we're having more change in more positions in key positions, which is not healthy for a successful organisation. I want to also point out what you mentioned there about the PLC board. I don't know who's on the PLC board. Told you. There's so many things. I can't keep track of it all. I've got no interest to track it all. But clearly, the boards of the PLC and the Don's Trust will also be strengthening the PLC board by recruiting non-executive directors with expertise in specialist fields over the coming months. But let's just leave that one there. I think also the point I want to sort of say to you, Stu, as well, you made the point about Chris coming in, taking over a role. We do need to have more flesh on the bones of this in terms of why Chris. And again, this is nothing to do with the individual. This is the fact of whoever was put into that position. Why? What was the rationale behind that person? What was the logic behind that particular individual being in that role? Without that, you're going to get more and more conspiracy theories. We've seen loads of those already. And you're going to get lots of more unhappy people posting all over every facet of social media that's out there currently. Because at the moment, yeah, it has not gone down well at all.
No, and this is the thing, isn't it? The answer could be that Chris Stewart was in the right place at the right time. He's already got experience with the PLC board, as Don's Trust board chair. He's already in with the PLC, so he's already got those relationships. But realistically, the managing director role isn't necessarily relation. It isn't always going top. It's also going below as well, isn't it? So, you've got to then he's going to be a direct report for people like Bow. Andrew just come into marketing, Pietro, he's going to be their direct reports. So equally, they're going to need to now step up. Realistic, they're going to have to step up and be have more autonomy and stuff like that. But equally below that, they need direction as well. And it's, I've been at organisations when the managing directors left, and it takes a while, and there's uncertainty. you know, naturally, as you're, you know, there's uncertainty. Is that person going to be able to do a job? At the moment, we've got an interim, so realistically, he's covering the role until someone else comes in, which again puts uncertainty in. And it's just, hey, look, I'm just looking at it from a simple. Well, I don't think I'm an owner now because my Don's Trust membership's run out. But I'm just looking at it from the top, and you know, it can go tits up. Football, you know, you lose one game, and all of a sudden, it's like last season, as some fans have said already. You know, football can very quickly. The football on the pitch was taking a little bit of heat away from the back office, and we need to continue.
You read off a list of names there of employees at the club, and again, like I say to you, Stu, no other football club would sort of have be asking these questions, would they? And that is the problem with the model that comes with it. And it does, as I said at start, does sort of suck the life out of you, a little bit of demoralization perhaps, but that's a whole big picture conversation for another time. We do have some football to discuss. I said we'd lose 2-1 3 weeks in a row. I have correctly predicted the scoreline: 1-1 Forest Green, 2-2 Newport County, 2-1 defeat at home to Stockport County. And the good news is I've got no earthly idea what's going to happen when we play Crewe next week, and we'll come on to that one in a bit. But the Stockport game, Stu, as we know, we were 1-0 up at half time. Josh Davison with his first goal of the season, which was from another James Tilley set piece. Set pieces are very important for us this season. Stockport defended it appallingly, it must be said. But then two quick goals in the second half. I think by the hour mark, they'd already taken the lead. They were 2-1 up with an equaliser from Louis Barry. And then Will Collar with the winner really took the game by the scruff of the neck, did Collar there. But a few headlines from that game. Obviously, both sides missing a lot of players for various reasons, including injuries, loan players that were ineligible, and international call-ups. We arguably are five, some might say six best players were not in that starting 11. I'm talking about in the starting 11, this is. So I'm talking about Biller, Curry, Reeves, Little, Alhamady, and Lewis. So we have to come to that. We have to think about the fact we are attacking the wrong end this season. We're attacking the away fans in the second half as opposed to the home fans' second half. But a number of clubs which put their away fans behind one of the goals will do this because they're still attacking towards their own fans, you know, the fans down the sides that are in those sort of down those ends. So a number of clubs do this. Luton did it for many, many years, in fact. So that's not unusual. It's just strange that we seem to have ended up doing this. It all comes down, I think, to the fact that we warm up in the opposite half that we used to. We've changed that this season for reasons.
It's obviously something that's been it's a conscious effort. It's not just you know, first game of the season, and we've got Harry Pell. So not Harry Pell. Jay Rees has come out and not realised what end we have fans. Do you know what I mean? It's obviously a conscious effort. I don't get it. I don't get it. If I'm being truthful. Does it make any difference? Probably not, if I'm being honest with you. Does it make difference shooting towards your own fans in the second half? Nothing suggests it's not. I don't think that's what affected us on Saturday, but it does seem a bit of a random one, doesn't it? I suppose football fans are just used to them shooting towards the home fans in the second half, aren't they? You know, you actually get that reaction when they turn you around, as such, and you're like, yeah, you get a disappointment. So maybe it's just that. Does it make much of a difference? No, but it's definitely a conscious effort.
It's also the fourth game in a row that we've scored first and not gone on to win the game. So obviously a bit of a hangover, you said there. Some people extrapolating that already. Let's not go down that line. Three things I wanted to touch on aside from that. First of all, the heat. So I don't think this has gone mentioned in many places. I think one of the big problems is against a good team with a deeper squad than we have. Stockport have a deeper squad than we have, despite them saying they have so many players injured. I think Paddy Madden, of course, you would have noticed, wasn't involved. He had to return home at short notice for a family emergency. But the Heat, when it's another game, so every home game this season, Stu, the away team has come with the ability and desire to get the ball on the floor and pass, and they'll pass and keep possession, and they'll play nice little triangles all over the pitch. We're very direct, so we will surrender the majority of possession. In the heat that we had on Saturday, that is knackering, especially when you looked at the numbers of something like 80% possession that Stockport had. So we have to be mindful of that. It's just the way we set up. We're going to have this issue all season long with the way we go about games and being more direct. but it takes its toll, I think, a little bit more in the heat. And that was reflected for me in the physicality. I think we lost so many 50-50s, we lost so many tackles, so many what the statisticians would call duels, just seemed to lose the majority of them, to be honest with you. And I think that told. And I think it was only in the final sort of few minutes into injury time where the young players coming on maybe won a few more. But by that time, it was far too late.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, the heat was ridiculous. We had drink breaks, but I think I had about four drink breaks, and that was in the first half alone. It was just ridiculous on that side of it. I'm not fitness wise. I'm not as I don't know if it made a massive difference because we are a fit side. I think we're probably the fittest we've been at these probably last 4 or 5 seasons. Had a really good pre-season. I think the biggest problem was we just couldn't keep the ball. But in the first half, I didn't think it made. See, the first half, I felt like we went 1-0 up, but we didn't really. There wasn't much in the game. It was a set piece that we won it from. Keeper got, I don't know, tagged. Keeper got tagged and stuck and couldn't move, and Josh Davidson scores. But we played more as a counter-attacking team in that first half, and I thought we'd done really well with the pace we had. It was. I thought we were playing okay. It was only when the game got stretched that we struggled, and Johnny Jackson alluded to that. But do you know what? The first goal we conceded. I mentioned this on the live show. James Tilly has got to wipe out the forward going past him. Just got to wipe him out. As soon as he goes past him, it's 3-on-2. Barry scores, great finish, but the game changes. Absolutely, the momentum changes, and I suppose when it's hot, you feel the heat a lot more when you're under pressure and not keeping the ball. And Stockport got a run, didn't they? And quickly went and won the game.
I must say that, so Oluwafi, the forward that broke, you say Tilly perhaps should have tried to tap his ankles or whatever, but he got a little bit of grief from our fans and a few maybe going down looking for things when they thought he was trying to buy some free kicks or whatever. But do you know what? I thought he was a threat all game. He was a pain in the backside, and he had
It was.
pace and he had strength. And I think he probably should have done better when he had one. In particular, one chance, perhaps trying to be too clever. But you know what? The difference is that he's there. He's been their super sub this season. He comes in place of Madden, who was unavailable. And that just showed perhaps the difference when we weren't starting with our first two strikers. We were maybe a bit light in that area. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, look, let's be fair. If James Tilly plays on the next day, my Sunday game, and London Broncos are there, he takes him out with a rugby tackle, doesn't he?
This is true,
Like,
but.
let's be fair. Let's be fair. If he's playing on Sunday instead of a Saturday, and that's not having a dig at, it's not having a dig at James Tilly. It's just, he probably looked back at it and gone, I should have done that. I should have done that.
Do wonder though, do you know what? Because in the first half, Lee Brown did exactly that when he didn't need to, got a really silly yellow card. He lost possession at the halfway line and just took the man out, even though he was 40 yards from goal and there were like four defenders back. And you do wonder sometimes, maybe if that was a conversation that was in the dressing room, maybe it's like, do you know all these little things you might just psychologically you might just be thinking, do I want to pick up a silly yellow card if that's how it's been termed elsewhere? It's one of those things, but anyway. The other thing I wanted to mention
Hey,
briefly.
look, it happens quickly. It happens quickly.
No, go on. So we've got a little bit of a delay on the line, which is causing us a little bit of a problem. But yeah, go
Say,
on.
yeah, I was just to say, I just say he's a very quick player. It happens very quickly. So it's just, in hindsight, yeah, you do that. I think we all see it, but actually it's a very that yeah, he's a quick player. But James' physicality, what I go back to, the difference was is that our front two couldn't keep the ball, and Harry Pell, I don't think one header the first half. And Josh Davidson got bullied by their two centre halves, plain and simple. I know a lot of people were moaning it with fouls, and they were. I think he's just bullied, and that's fair play to them. But we never got any momentum in the first half because of that. And in the second half, when we had to chase the game, equally we had no momentum until we brought Omar on. But I was going to say Omar being on the bench was a strange one for me. But we've got a squad now, haven't we?
Maybe a slight knock. He's carrying his word. Didn't came off at half time against Newport, didn't he, the week before? So, anyway, Ethan Sutcliffe was the other thing I was just going to mention. Again, another youngster coming and getting some game time, and in his very short cameo, did appear similar to what we said about Morgan Williams. What was interesting about Williams on Saturday was that the composure and stuff that he'd showed previously, perhaps being a young player, this is what we were saying before, Stu, being a young player, you've got to tread carefully with them because then you put them into a game where he comes on as a sub. And he's thinking he's got to make something happen. he's been brought in to change the game, and then he's trying almost too hard and trying some passes that were never going to come off. And so, but anyway, Sutcliffe comes on very, very composed and looks a very promising, another promising youngster.
Yeah, and we've got many of them coming through. We just need to not get too excited. That's the thing. And you're right, Morgan Williams. Hey, look, it's his first pro season, so he's going to dip in and out of form. And you're right, maybe he is coming on and he thinks he's got to push it a bit more. And let's be fair, our creativity from the midfield areas wasn't the greatest, and we are missing out massively on Jake Reeves and Marnie Little. But hey, look, Stockport done a number on us. They're a good team. I think if you finish above Stockport, you easily get a playoff place this season, on that side of it. And we made it work. We made it work for it. Let's not get too down about it. The losing record was going to go at some point. We have got players to come back in. There's a lot of positives on it. But yeah, it's our first little setback, and Crewe come to us on Saturday in sixth place. What's that all about? We'll chat about Crewe in a little while.
Yeah, well, just before we get on to that, you say they are in sixth place. So a quick look at League Two and any scores or scorelines that took your attention. Obviously, we see that Gillingham, I believe, returned to the top of the league with their fifth win in seven games, if I got that right, with a late win over Harrogate, another 1-0 win. So they are a team top of the league with a goal difference of zero. I don't know if that's ever happened in football before, but. But I wanted to
I
highlight
don't know.
the Salford and Walsall because that was a game we picked out for one to look forward to last weekend. And just Walsall got another win at Salford, and Salford have started the season really, really poorly. It's very strange, very odd. Another defeat for them. Whereas Walsall, Chris Hussey having announced his retirement from football, by the way, today, Walsall have started well. Fair play to Walsall, the only Polish team in the English Football League.
Yeah, there's a few results I was looking at. I was looking at Colchester, beating Tranmere, and then Tranmere sacked
Yes, of course.
their manager, which is it's that time of the year, isn't it? Well, it could be any time of the year when you sack people, but yeah. So Tranmere replaced. So Colchester move out of the bottom bit, and they're picking up some results. But yeah, the Salford one. Bearing the reason I sort of linked it in with Tranmere is that when with Salford are known to go through managers.
Yeah.
I think they've been a bit more loyal to it, but how long do they go with that? Because again, they spend a bit of money. And I suppose you also look at Swindon scoring five again. They scored five against Wrexham, remember, didn't they?
And six against
Yeah, scored
Crawley.
five. That's right. And yeah, they've still got a game in hand because I think their game for the first game of the season got called off. So they look to be a form team, and I'm dreading, we are not dreading, but obviously they want to avoid. And Sutton United, second from bottom now. So, interesting league. It's we didn't think Sutton would be down where they are. I know it's early doors, but the league is starting to take a little bit of shape at the moment.
Yeah, Sutton are in a little. They are really, really struggling. Made a game of it despite being 3-0 down, but they are in trouble. Doncaster still yet to win a game. We're not playing them soon, are we? Please.
Can I just quickly say, by the way, if you've not seen Mansfield's third goal at Accrington,
Oh, yes.
oh my days, like that would teach you for playing out from the back, wouldn't it? You know what? It was one of those goals where you think, if you're a goalkeeper, you're thinking, what have I walked in on the way to the ground? Because like that is just inch perfect into the top corner.
I think Mansfield remain unbeaten in the league so far this season. And, you know, they're always up there. They got to the playoff final 2 seasons ago and challenging last season. And they'll always be up there at the moment because there's big investment have gone in at Mansfield, as we know. Long ways, long time since we went there in the conference and barely anyone turned up. At Field Mill, Stu. Field
Yeah,
Mill. Yeah,
Mansfield.
Mansfield Ground. Yeah. Quickly before we get on to the Crewe game, then Aaron Sass super match game. This is related to our game with Crewe on the weekend. In our first season back in the Football League in 2011-12, we lost 3-1 at home and drew 3-3 away to Crewe Alexandra. All right. Our goal scorer in the home game also scored at Gretzky Road, and that player was blank blank.
Byron Harrison.
A good guess. It's good, but it's not right, I'm afraid. Do
Oh.
you want one more go?
Sammy Moore.
So unlucky because Sam Moore did score in the 3-3 draw, but he was not the one that scored our goal in the home defeat. No, it was a man who is neither Christian nor very happy. Christian Jolly.
Bless him.
A real blast from the past was that name. If you remember at the end of our first season in the conference, where we ended it really poorly. We lost at home to Grays, and we lost at Gateshead, and we lost to pretty much everyone we played against in that last sort of six games or whatever. And then we went to the sponsors meal, and Christian Jolly had already signed. So he was like our first signing of the new season. Like, we signed a guy from Kingstonian, and we were all just like, we just lost at home to Grays, and we signed players from Kingstonian. What the hell are we doing? And how wrong we
Can I just
were.
mention, by the way, you mentioned Gateshead. This is really random linking as well. Gateshead beat Eastleigh 6-0 at Eastleigh on Saturday, right? Last season,
Bowled them over.
Gateshead beat last season, Tim Ford, Gateshead won 5-0 at Eastleigh.
Wow. Do you know what's annoying about that is the
How
fact that
random.
our connection is so bad that I couldn't hear your face lit up explaining this. And I was waiting for the sound to catch up. So I was like, this better be. But there you go. So next season, they'll obviously get a 7-0 win at Eastleigh.
How mad is that? Scoring 5 goals away from home. Can you imagine Eastleigh fans going, "Oh, this is so like last season. I can't believe it." And then the six goes in. You're like, "What?"
It's like when Liverpool beat Newcastle 4-3 two seasons in a row. The second time, everyone was like,
Yeah.
"What?" And then Sky went, "Okay, we'll put it on again the following
We'll have
season."
that
And
game.
it was absolute dire, like 1-0 or something. Anyway, so there you go, Christian Jolly. But that was Crewe Alexandra that we played, as we mentioned, we referenced last week because Nick Powell scored in that game. He scored in both games, actually. Obviously, he played for Stockport last week and didn't do anything, breathtaking, but again, showed just his experience and his strength and everything like that we touched on earlier. Anyway, last season, Crewe finished 13th in League Two. They were top of the bottom. They were the best performers of the four teams that had been relegated from League One the season before, us, Doncaster, and Gillingham being the other three. Last week, they won 4-1 at Forest Green Rovers because Forest Green Rovers, when you don't eat meat and you're playing in those temperatures, you've got no chance, absolutely zero chance. Proved by the game because I think Forest Green went one lap and then just ran out of energy. They all just started having to have naps on the pitch whilst the game was still going on. So it's 4-1 they won. And they are, as you said earlier, Stu, they're currently sixth. They've won three, drawn three, and lost just the once this season. Their manager is Lee Bell, has been in charge now for about 9 months, former youth coach. Not very many ins, lots of outs last season in the summer. Rod McDonald and Dan Adji, who my dad still likes to call Dan a gay. They left and that's how he pronounces it. I'm sure he might be, we don't know. No, but there's no real standout names that came in, to be honest with you. Obviously, it's they got what's his name, Dimitri from Newport, who scored a few goals already this season for them. But Courtney Baker Richardson is the sort of their poster boy, as it was, the centre forward. He scored twice in the last two games. And we still remain winless at Plough Lane on Saturday since the 28th of January. So all that said, Stu, and knowing that Crewe score and concede a lot of goals, we're expecting what on Saturday?
Especially a tough game. Especially a tough game. They've scored buckets of goals, and obviously up there on merit. But let's be fair. If we turn one of our draws into wins, we're up there with them as well. So it's probably a very evenly matched teams. We need to bounce back. I think it really is important who we actually see back in the team. I think it's too early for Marnie Little. But if we can get someone like Jake Reeves back in, obviously we get Joe Lewis to come back in, it was a massive loss. And also if we can get Jack Curry in. So we've got if we can get players back in, but it's a tough game. It's a tough game, but we've got to win at home. We've got to break our duck at home and start picking up the points that we are away from home.
Jake Reeves, I believe, is in hospitality on Saturday, so will therefore not be involved, I'm afraid.
Lovely.
Never mind. Do you want a scoreline
Very
prediction?
quiet. Just say it's very quiet on certain injuries, isn't it? We're not forthcoming, and when we're not forthcoming, I worry because it most probably means we've got stuff we don't want to say. But prediction: a 1-0 win for Wimbledon.
So crew, bucket loads of goals, concede loads, score loads. You're going to go, well, Stu, I'm going to go and see if I can make it 4 out of 4 with my predictions. And I'm going to go, I think, you know, we'll, if we don't win this one, we'll beat Tranmere in a couple of weeks, okay? But we'll win one of them at least. The other one will be a draw. Let's say this weekend it will be another draw. I'm going to go for a 3-all draw. Let's have another 3-all draw with crew. We love a 3-all draw with crew. It's going to be great. It's going to be exciting. And you know what the best thing is? There's going to be fucking trains to get us there for once this season. So that would be nice as well. I mean, apt considering we were playing the railway men.
Go on, all right. I can live with a 3-all draw if we're 3-0 down at half time and we do an amazing comeback. But
No,
3-all
no.
draws.
Do you know what I think? I always think of the Newcastle game in the Premier League. Do you remember that? It was all back and forth, like sort the whole. That's what sort of entertainment you want, isn't it? It's not about winning.
I don't know. No. Oh, look, do you know what? Yeah, you can go down to the Phoenix, have a drink beforehand to the fan zone and stuff like that. But you want to win games, don't you? Do you know what? The Phoenix, by the way, the music, can I just say this, right? We do not need music at half time. I went down there, do you know what, to get a bit of peace and quiet, to get a bit of fresh air. There was none around at Plough Lane on Saturday. And the blooming DJ is blasting out the tunes. I'm like, this is half time. This is the time to have a break. Anyway.
Can I also just point out there, when we make those references to winning not being important and stuff like that, we are taking the mick out of the reaction a certain Daily Mirror article got, by the way. I feel sometimes, Stu, you have to actually explain the joke because people still don't get it. It's like when I insult Liam Trotter on Twitter, it's me. I am the butt of the fucking joke, all right? It's my absolute insanity and hatred of Liam Trotter. I'm poking fun of myself. I feel like I have to explain every time we make a joke, Stu, because otherwise people get offended. And I
You
end
know
up
what,
getting
I
in
found
trouble.
the reaction was pathetic, if I'm being truthful with you, with Jones, you know Jonesy well. And I get it, you know, Plough Lane is an experience, and it's more of a case of, do you know what, no one wants to lose a game of football, but it's a game of football at the end of the day. And I suppose that's a bit cheap from me when I used to really, in my younger days, I used to go in, shut the bedroom door, and sulk until Monday morning when we lost the game. Now I just sulk for about 5 minutes, and I go and get a bit of a drink in the Phoenix and try and enjoy the mate, you know, the rest of the day with my mates. So yes, we were having a bit of a laugh at that. But hey, if you're not enjoying football, don't worry, don't care. Just go and have a drink, have a pint.
Back in the day, of course, and we're running out very, very quickly of time. But back in the day, of course, when we lost a football match, Stu would go home and he'd start kidnapping kittens and chopping their legs off. Absolutely 100% true. So anyway, we have to go. Stu, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Updates from the game with crew will be on Twitter at Nine Wires Podcast. Dons TV will be on the club's official Facebook and YouTube channel before the game as well. But that is it for this week. Alexa Bliss bagged first milk last. 2 plus 2 equals 4. And we shall speak to you again next week.